Welcome. The fundamental nature of the mind, awareness, isn't something difficult. How could it be? There would be no mind without the fundamental nature of the mind. It isn't something that is an object in time and space to which someone who is a subject relates. So the nature of the mind isn't understandable or discernible in a subject-object relationship. So to approach the knowledge of ourselves as we truly are, through looking at ourselves as someone who is headed to a destination called the fundamental nature of mind, will just lead to more turmoil. It'll just be turmoil of a new kind. And even if we're able to neutralize the contents of our mind somewhat through a new approach of a subject looking for something that is an object, then it will never lead to complete resolution of the contents of the mind in its basic space. The empty, originally pure, flawless, stainless, basic space of awareness has never gone to anything. It's never gone to anything other than itself. This is what a single non-dual expanse means. It means that it's entirely non-dual in nature, that it's stainless, flawless. Original purity has never taken itself up as anything. It's never taken itself up as something impure that needs to be purified. If we look at ourselves as a subject or an object that needs to be purified, then we're a very long way from realizing the reality, the underlying reality of everything. Many of us learn that our awareness is somewhere in here, that it's within the skin line of our body, that it's maybe even in an organ called the brain. And that is something that is a conventional topic of knowledge or understanding. That's all that it is. It's something that's understood at this point in time, but it isn't something that's been understood throughout all of time. In the past, other ideas have been had about where the mind is, and in the future, there will be yet other ideas. When we believe that we have generated awareness from within ourselves, then we have a point of view about who we take ourselves to be. We take ourselves to be an entity that is destructible, and that the awareness that has been generated by that entity, that is destructible too. It's destructible not only in terms of death, but it's possibly even destructible by its contents, the thoughts and emotions. When we broaden our understanding about what the nature of mind is through simply relaxing our body and mind completely, we will very likely arrive at an entirely different conclusion about what awareness is, where it is, how it is, and why it is. It cannot be arrived at through intellectual speculation, but only through the complete relaxation of the body and mind in all circumstances. So I'm not suggesting just sitting around in a completely relaxed state in an easy chair all the time, but completely relaxing body and mind in all situations and all circumstances in relation to and indeed as everything that appears. When we completely relax body and mind repeatedly for short moments, many times in a completely uncontrived way, then sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, we will come to completely realize the true nature of all phenomena, including ourselves, all of our thoughts and emotions, the world we live in, the universe, the cosmos, and whatever may be beyond. The more we relax, the more it becomes obvious that awareness has never been generated by anything, let alone an individual human body. Awareness simply is, and it's completely inseparable from basic space. Space itself is aware. And just like the color blue cannot be separated from the sky, so awareness cannot be separated from that basic space. Everything that appears within space is space. It isn't anything other than that. And we don't have to rely on secondhand knowledge to know that that's true. Today we can look at any kind of object or subject with advanced scientific instrumentation, and when it's reduced to its essence, there's nothing there. There's just space. When we settle into the relaxed nature of everything, we just relax into that space that is the essence of our nature. And when we do so, we can arrive at this conclusive evidence of the reality that there's nothing separate. There's nothing at all separate anywhere. There have never been categories or systems that exist elsewhere other than awareness. Everything, no matter what it is rooted in awareness. There isn't anything whatsoever that is rooted anywhere other than in the stainless, flawless, original purity of awareness. To strive to try to study, understand, intellectualize that which is completely beyond words and concepts is a lot of work. To try to make ourselves good enough, worthy enough, pure enough to understand or to realize something that already is also a lot of work. If we're trying to purify ourselves to be worthy enough to realize who we are, then we'll spend a lot of time doing that. And in order to realize who we are, we'll have to arrive at the conclusion that we have never been in tears. So looking at everything and purifying, examining, trying to get rid of an individual, a personality, an ego is a lot of work, and in the end we'll say, well, there was never an ego to work on. Where is that individual I was working on? I can't seem to locate the one I thought was at the control panel. What appears in basic space is nothing other than that essence. of space itself. So when we just simply relax, that becomes very clear to us. If we try to understand it, we may be able to understand it to some small degree. But what we want to arrive at about ourselves is completely beyond intellectual speculation. Completely beyond intellectual speculation is that which could be called the ease of being, the genuinely tranquil ease of being that is the origin of all benefit, whether we regard it as self-benefit or benefit for the whole. If we relax enough to arrive at that self-benefit that's already accomplished and already existing, then it's very likely that we'll have an impulse to benefit others as well. To find complete absolute freedom from the contents of our own mind is completely amazing. It's totally amazing, and we can't help but want to share that with others once it's been realized. So being a benefit to others is naturally occurring and inseparable from the vast expanse of awareness. Thoughts and emotions that appear within awareness are like the rays of the sun. They're the dynamic energy of awareness and nothing else. They wouldn't exist without awareness. Each one that appears is like a mirage or a hologram. It has no origin or nature that's independent of pure space itself. When we relax body and mind completely, we understand something new about our body. We've taken ourselves to be trapped within a skin line, but the more we relax, the more we decisively experience the complete enjoyment body. The complete enjoyment body that never fell to time or place. It's never been trapped in time or place. Never been trapped in cause and effect. Never been trapped in causing something that will lead to the result of what already is. After many decades of striving to try to be a good person or the right kind of person, and having many people, including ourselves, saying, well, you're not the right kind of person, you need to improve. Just because you're a human being, that means there's something fundamentally wrong with you that will always need to be fixed. These are all just points of view within the all-encompassing peer view of awareness. They're entirely circumstantial, and there's nothing that can be done about them. Nothing whatsoever that can be done about them. To understand them thoroughly, correctly, and absolutely is to just relax in the fundamental nature of your own awareness. Then it becomes evident that everything that appears within awareness is just a point of view within the all-encompassing pure view of awareness. That's all it is. And nothing that appears has any special status. Anger, happiness, grief, bliss, all equal. If we persist in thinking that we have to accumulate good thoughts and good feelings in order to be free, the pile of good thoughts and feelings will never be high enough. We'll always believe we have to have more. Good thoughts, good feelings, good actions. To relax completely and to understand conclusively and definitively that everything is equal and even, no matter what it is. And in that equalness and evenness lives an unparalleled wisdom. An unparalleled wisdom that doesn't need to rely on extremes. Like good and bad, harmony and disharmony, personal and impersonal, movement and non-movement. Flawless, stainless, originally pure, basic space has never been holed up anywhere. It doesn't need anything to describe itself. It's just the completely relaxed nature of everything as it is. As much as we may want to describe it, to describe it is to probably write a book. And once we've written a book, then we'll be known for something. And once we're known for having called it something, then everywhere we go, we're going to have to call it that something. So once it's called impersonal or personal or movement or non-movement or now or then or whatever it is, then that becomes the identity. The completely relaxed nature of everything just as it is the platform, so to speak, of all existence. And if we just look around, this is more obvious than obvious. Everything, no matter what it is completely relaxed and at ease. The sky is relaxed in space. The planets and stars hang freely and effortlessly. Space debris is doing just whatever it does. The planet Earth continues on for however long it continues on. The sun too. The flowers, birds, fishes, trees, rivers, oceans, whatever it is, just completely relaxed in their own nature. And the case for us, too, is the same. We're not any different than that. If we just look at our bodies, it's so clear. The skin relaxes over our skeletal frame without effort. All the compounded circumstances that lead to the skeletal frame, all that's completely relaxed and operating without any effort whatsoever. The hair on our head, it's just kind of resting there. Even if the wind blows us here and there, the hair will relax again. So everything, no matter what it is completely relaxed and it's essence, without anything needing to be done, without anything needing to change. No special circumstances required to relax completely. If you're a software programmer at Microsoft, it's just as easy to relax completely as it is sitting by the Ganga. Whatever your circumstances are, they're the complete stuff of pure space, already completely relaxed and free. Valley of the Phoenix. When we're constantly trying to fix ourselves, then we automatically believe everyone else needs to be fixed too. So, you know, this does not lead to harmonious relationships. This is very elementary, isn't it? We think there's something wrong with us, then we're absolutely sure that there's something wrong with everybody else, too. One plus one. when we relax completely for short moments, repeated many times, without trying to examine anything as this or that, we settle into an unparalleled self-kindness. Just a gentle, warm, compassionate, tender-heartedness for ourselves, probably for the first time in our entire lives. And that is our permanent nature. That's our fundamental nature. When we relax to the degree that we decisively experience that, then we know that this is true about everyone else too, no matter who they are. And it's much easier to see the way things are is completely due to this basic erroneous perception that there's something wrong with us first of all, and second of all, that awareness is generated by our human body, but it's somehow destructible. When we relax, we see that everything that appears within our awareness is equally indefinite and indeterminate. It's completely unpredictable. No matter how much we strive to rearrange, transform, analyze, manipulate all of our thoughts and emotions, are we ever able to do that? No. They're indeterminate, unpredictable, just the dynamic energy of awareness. And relaxing completely, we see that there's nothing that needs be done about them. The wholesome goodness of our original being isn't dependent on the attribution of positive and negative labels to the contents of our mind. The wholesome goodness that is inseparable from the basic space of everything is in the relaxed evenness of knowing that everything is equal no matter its label. That is true wisdom. That is true absolute wisdom and great-heartedness. Good has never come about in a permanent way by looking at everything as good and evil. Yet within the basic nature of everything is the wholly positive expanse of what can never be turned into anything other than good. Remaining a philosophy until we just relax completely and experience it as our own nature. Doesn't matter what we call it, we don't have to say, I'm experiencing something, or there's no one experiencing something. Just rest. No philosophical descriptions are necessary. In the complete relaxation of your own being, all questions are answered. All philosophical affirmations and defamations come to an end. The completely bipartisan nature that has been taken to be so real just falls on its face in evenness, in gleeful evenness. When we think there's something wrong with us and we need to be fixed, then we will seek a circumstance where other people think there's something wrong with us and we need to be fixed. In relaxing completely, we just rest in the kindness of our own being. And we find that that kindness of our own being is without impediment. We don't need to be in any special circumstance or have any special thoughts or emotions in order for that absolute kindness to be the essence of everything. Beyond everything we've learned about a world of opposites is that it is completely pure like space. Without struggling. This must be like a lullaby because someone's fallen asleep. Which is just fun. Do you have a question?
No.
Oh. Would anyone like to ask a question or make a comment?
We can see that you do not subscribe for meditation, but at the same time you are not against the idea of meditation. And in meditation, to align the meditation with your teaching, for the last couple of days, I tried to not take any help of any mantra, and not to focus the mind on any point. So that sort of meditation, we can just call it relaxation actually, rather than that we are sitting at a particular place, then we calm place. Other than that, there is nothing special in this meditation or relaxation. In that state, what happens is the mind becomes no mind. That is the attitude of mind is there. And or the mind expands to engulf the entire space for us. Is that the attitude of the response?
That's great. That's the correct understanding. When there is no relaxation, then there's the need for a fixed reference point. So in we could call one contrived meditation and one uncontrived. In contrived meditation, there's focus on a particular point, whether it's a mantra, watching the breath, watching the candle flame. In uncontrived meditation, there's no reference point. The complete relaxation of awareness, like you said, engulfs everything. But not as something other, like a cat watching a mouse. It's a seamless expanse.
There's no attempt to engulf anything or space in particular. It is just automatic.
Exactly. It's automatic. It's so easy. And that is naturally present everywhere, not just on the meditation cushion.
All these again points of reference as we can call them.
Yes. Once there is enough relaxation that there isn't constant distraction by reference points. The benefit of naturally occurring wisdom that is beyond learning and thinking about things in order to solve problems becomes very obvious. So from that flawless, stainless expanse, a solution to a problem arises that could never have been arrived at through thinking. It's the true harmonizing of all relationships, the one where no relationship is ever left out because it's all seamlessly part of itself. Everything is contained within everything.
I knew the teaching, more or less the same thing, almost when I was very young, almost 10 years back, but when 8-9 years back when I had crisis, psychological crisis, you can say, I knew that I need to rest, relax, and this is how it is. I knew the almost the same thinking, but in spite of that, that time I could not relax actually. I could not relax, and I was working. There was no need to leave that and come back to ashram. But the situation, it became so unbearable that I had to leave and come back to ashram. And of course it neutralized to some extent. And even after coming to ashram, in the beginning there, the rest was, you know, very rare. It continued for some time, maybe 3-4 years. And of course the rest become, then I switched over the conventional way. From the beginning I tried to follow the same teaching. I studied a lot these teachings and tried to practice, but I was not having, you know, rest. The main thing is rest only, no? In the teaching, main thing. Unless we have the rest there, we cannot practice it. It's not a practice also. And however much, it is not even trying not to try, In spite of that, I was trying. And it was 36, then I thought, okay, let me try for some time this conventional way. I tried the conventional, this thing, and then things become more easier. So don't you think that in the beginning, the conventional, this thing offers us? Or what went wrong, what should I have done 7-8 years back, which would have made my resting easier and natural, instead of my for sometimes switching over to conventional ways and trying the meditation aspect and other things. Now it's fine. Now everything is fine. No problem at all. Now I don't have any problem. Just on the inside there.
Fine, sir.
Just for curiosity's sake, I'm asking the question.
Well, that's a good question. There are all kinds of teachings for all kinds of beings. And this particular teaching is a teaching that is for people who are open-minded and require no conceptual framework. It's based solely on the direct perception of the natural state from the very beginning. So that is the practice, to rest in that natural state repeatedly for short moments, many times until it becomes automatic. Now, what is helpful in doing that is to have a teacher, or at least a friend, who has already resolved all their points of view through that practice. Very simple. It's just like anything else. If you want to learn to be a good plumber, then you talk to a good plumber and have them teach you how to do that. So this kind of support is immeasurably helpful. Anyone who has reached the point of the complete exhaustion of all phenomena within the basic space of awareness can be very helpful in supporting someone else who is resting in awareness. Resting in awareness, in other words, the direct perception of mind, it can't be mixed with other things. There are only four things that can be done with appearances. One is to indulge them. Two, to renounce or avoid them. Examples of that would be solitude and celibacy. Three is to replace them with another state. So an appearance comes up and to say, oh no, that appearance isn't the appearance I want to have, so I'm going to replace it with another appearance, like a negative emotion comes up or a negative action, and to replace it with a positive action or a positive emotion, a positive thought, to replace anger with compassion, that sort of thing. So all of those approaches require a doer. And when you talk about conventional methods and practices, I think that's what you're referring to. Something that even though the teaching may be non-dual, there is a doer involved in manipulating appearances in some way, either through indulging, avoiding, or replacing. Now, the fourth approach is the direct perception of the mind, the introduction to awareness in the very beginning, and then from flawless awareness, see all as flawless awareness until all is flawless awareness. That's the only practice. But again, it not only requires the introduction to awareness by someone who can introduce you to awareness, but it requires 100% commitment to that practice. 100% commitment. It can't be mixed with anything else. To mix it with something else is like trying to mix oil with water or something like that. To rest in flawless, stainless awareness is like pouring space into space. So that's all it is. It's just space. It can't be mixed with anything else. Many times there are people who experience what you have just described. For a long period of time, even years, there can be complete mental freedom and the feeling like I've realized what I've meant to realize. I feel completely free. My mind is completely free. And then suddenly there will be an upsurge of negative emotions. And then very often, if there isn't a teacher or at least a friend who has resolved phenomena through understanding conclusively the true nature of phenomena, then there can be all kinds of thoughts about that. Oh, there's something wrong with me. I didn't really realize the true nature of the mind. But what's happening is really something that is very common and to be expected. It's an organic process. Usually the positive and the neutral points of view are resolved first, and then the negative points of view appear, the extremely afflictive ones, whatever they might be, panic, anxiety, unworthiness, impending doom, even paranoia or something like that. But unless you have a teacher who has been through that, then there's no one there to help you other than your own confidence. Now, it can be done with your own confidence and enthusiasm. You can say, well, no matter what is appearing, I'm going to rest. Unworthiness, gut-wrenching unworthiness, gut-wrenching panic, big mud puddle of anxiety, whatever it is, I'm just going to keep resting as the basic space of that. Just because it has a label that's been endlessly described in many, many conventional ways, it doesn't mean that it is that way. But if you take it to be that way, it will be that way.
Now that we have been told this about the negative point of views and other things, when we come across the crisis again, don't you think we'll be able to face it, or we need again help?
There are so many subtle points of view that we have. So a point of view is when we take something to have an origin of its own. So we take something to have an identity that's independent of everything else, that it's a self-sustaining mechanism somehow. And if we believe that about anything, then that's a point of view that we need to rest as. And some of these can be very subtle. So after resting for a time, negative states can come up, afflictive states. But they can also be other things that we've never really thought much about. For example, we may have a subtle point of view, a subtle belief that awareness depends on us, that there is no awareness unless we are, that awareness is dependent on our life. So we may have to arrive at a conclusion that no, awareness isn't dependent on our life. That's a subtle point of view. That awareness is dependent on whether our heart is beating or not. See, these are very subtle points of view. That awareness is dependent on our breath. But after all of these things go, I can guarantee you awareness is. At death, when the breath goes, when the heartbeat goes, awareness is. Awareness is. That's just all there is to it. And awareness isn't dependent on other things like the warmth of our body. That's another subtle point of view, that we depend on just the warmth of being in order to be. But being isn't warm or cold. It isn't anything that can be described. It's never taken up any extreme. Or we may have a subtle point of view that our life depends on other elements, like the earth, that we need to have the earth in order to be, or we need to have air in general to be. The more we relax completely, the more we arrive at just a natural understanding of all of this that is completely beyond philosophical categories. I can describe all those things to you, but if I describe them to you and then you realize them in your own experience, that's a much different thing than understanding something mentally. To be completely free of all fixed reference points whatsoever, earth, universe, galaxies, body, mind, whatever it might be, is to be completely at ease without any thinking about it.
Now that we have rest, and we have been told that it is supposed to be unconditional and not dependent on any situation and the thing, and we don't find the same. I don't find the same in my case, because I find it is in a way conditional, like a particular way of this thing, you know, some of the things it takes a rest, in a way.
Some of the things.
Like suppose I go to sleep, I have rest, I feel the rest and this thing, and the awareness is there. And sometimes I find that awareness in the sleep also sometimes, generally it goes, awareness totally goes. In a way, means consciously, we are not conscious. So, is there any chance of this awareness becoming not natural? Like, do you understand me what I'm saying?
No, not natural.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
Means now rest is it is in a way coming and going, no? In a way, of course, as you say that when there is no rest, also it is. Rest again it is. But we are not conscious of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, what I mean to say is that is there any chance of that this rest supposed to become more and more and unconditional and undependent situation?
Absolutely.
Means that in a traditional way, what we speak, conventional way, that is, it is unfolding itself more and more in our personal life, and we feel it more and more. That what you say, the dimmer light becoming more and more brighter. What I mean to say that, is there any chance of it not becoming brighter and brighter, and it is just becoming stagnant?
No. No, there isn't. Not unless you give up and return to the philosophy books.
Of course, I am not going to return to philosophy. Enough of those things.
Well, you have other friends who live with you where you live, who are resting without trying to do so. Some of them are in this room, so... In the beginning, there's rest, and there's the attempt to rest, and then very quickly, this is the path of swift accomplishment, there's rest with no need to try to do so. And in all situations, no matter what they are, just immense evenness. Something more?
No, but...
What do you mean by not mixing? Not mixing with resting with anything else.
Uh-huh.
In resting awareness, there's no doer. There's just awareness. There's no one doing anything to try to change or shift circumstances or situations to make them into something else. So if there's a combination of the two things, in other words, resting in awareness and then either indulging points of view or avoiding renouncing points of view or replacing points of view in order to reach some kind of a destination, then that's mixing two practices, one, the direct perception of mind, with a practice that implies that there is someone headed towards a destination.
Most of the teachings are of non-meditation, of great power.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last 5 years, I have tried combining the teachings of those masters and personal experiences, they work for the group.
Say.
They work quite nicely.
Uh-huh.
They are consistent, there is no consistency at all, and they see results. But when you said that this practice of resting in awareness should not be combined with other practices, maybe we have to elaborate a bit more.
Sure. What I mean by that is that if you're resting in awareness, then you've already realized what there's to realize. And it's just a matter of continuing to do so no matter what appears. Now, if you're resting in awareness and then combining it with a practice where there is a subject who's headed towards an object called the destination of realization, then that's mixing two kinds of things that don't go together. However, if you are resting in awareness, you can be doing anything. You can be involved in mantra repetition, seva, meditation, whatever it is, as long as whatever it is you're involved in isn't something that you think is leading somewhere. Do you see what I'm saying? It's just like you gave us a beautiful description of your meditation practice. Once you were just meditating as resting completely in the ease of being, then all fixed reference points were completely relaxed. This is the goal of meditation. So you realize the goal of meditation by just relaxing completely. And then that complete relaxation is not circumstance dependent. So no matter what you're doing, it's already naturally present. If you like to chant or do yoga or repeat mantras or be a network engineer or whatever it is, all of those are equally relaxed avenues of being.
So meditation with the aid of a mantra, can that be combined with your teaching?
Let's put it this way. The ultimate mantra is complete rest. The word mantra means that which soothes the mind. So if we're looking ultimately for what soothes the mind, we find, just like you did in meditation, that it's complete relaxation. Then mantra repetition that's leading somewhere is no longer necessary. Then mantra repetition can just be an enjoyable activity like any other activity. Looking at the garden, planting a garden, picking the flowers.
So mantra should not be used as a repetition.
Exactly.
If I see a thing not in full rest, to this point of view, that the pattern intention that I used to do from is going to help me reach something, some goal or so. If I'm not in rest with it, would you recommend not to meditate for a while? To stop this aspect? Just to leave it for a while?
What I would suggest is that you choose a practice and you commit to it 100%. Like I said, there are different kinds of practices for different beings. This is just part of the beneficial expression of basic space. Its wholly positive nature is that wherever there are beings who need anything in particular, then there will be teachers who appear, or teachings who appear, who benefit in that specific way. So whatever it is that is a match for you, only you can decide on. But whatever it is, commit to it 100%. And then I will say that the easiest and most direct of all practices is to rest naturally in the ease of your own being and to return to that repeatedly. Throughout history, there are more people who have come to realize the fundamental nature of their mind through that practice than the combination of all other practices, because it is so easy. So direct. It's something that anyone can do. It doesn't even require being able to read or being able to understand complex philosophical concepts. When we talk about what's already present and absolutely accessible and available to everyone, then we mean that, you know, that it is absolutely accessible to everyone. It doesn't depend on anything else. It doesn't depend on special circumstances. It doesn't depend on being able to read. It doesn't depend on being learned enough to understand philosophical assumptions. It doesn't depend on being intellectually bright. All we have to do is just be alive to rest. And so it's equally accessible to everyone. Also, whatever your points of view are, in other words, your thoughts and emotions and experiences, none of those need to change. So you don't need to make your thoughts, emotions, and experiences like someone else's, like those of an historical figure. Or it is so entirely beneficial and so entirely all-pervasively imbued with loving kindness that whatever your own points of view are, that that is the ground path and fruition of your realization. Nothing needs to change.
And then I heard him saying, this is teaching resting. And what he told me was like what I experienced the last time after you had left. I was falling in a very negative state. And nothing fit anymore. And I was like away from the resting. And although the ashram didn't fit more, nothing fit anymore. And then I got the offer to go to Ladakh, so I went. I just didn't want to know everything anymore. I found a note in Lille, in the Vipassana meditation, and I thought, this is my crook. This helps me. And I did that. In a way, it helped me. So, through, and it was a paradox, it was so ridiculous to come back to this conventional and find the place again, what I left before, through the resting. And then I came back, and I didn't want to go to the ashram, I didn't want to see Maharaji. And one day I decided to go down, and he was out. And there was so much love, and it was so beautiful. And everything, this negativity was suddenly gone, was gone, without doing anything. And then I could sit again. And then I found it ridiculous to do something. Then I could come and rest more.
Yeah.
So I'm very thankful to you that you and that you elaborated what it's because I didn't know what was going on.
Sure. It's in the Great Freedom Teaching we not only have Sat Sang as you know, but we have written teachings. And all of this is stated very clearly in the written teaching. How to rest in all kinds of situations. Now, because you're here and you know teachers where you can be just in that presence of total and complete love, you know how to get supported when something like that comes up. Non-dual, a seamless, non-dual, stainless, flawless expanse means just that, that everything, no matter what it is completely flawless and love imbued, including all negative states. It doesn't mean that all negative states suddenly disappear forever and there are only flower-covered fields with no toadstools. It means that in that complete rest of perfect love beyond all understanding, everything is equal. Everything is totally equal. The good moods and the bad moods, the meditating and the non-meditating, the love and the unlove, ordinary love and ordinary unlove.
Something went deeper
after
that.
Absolutely much. Because this is the exhaustion of all points of view, where all points of view are seen as equal. Not in an intellectual way, but in a lived way. In a completely lived way. This is what true love is. We can only recognize it in ourselves in relation to our own points of view, whatever they are, our own thoughts and emotions.
Which is, it was quite similar for me. I did the prompt inquiries, something like what Shanti said. I did the prompt inquiries, the other friend, and it was for me the same. After Kathy and Johan, my teachers, we had a mental way, and it was just, yeah, it was, I hadn't had those negative thoughts, it just came up from me, and it was like, it was just like living in hell. It was really, it was, it was the worst time in my life, I could say, and it was for me of great help. And now I'm back to the, also the healthcare system and all this, and trying to do something again, and trying to find a way, and nothing helped. And for me it was a really great help to, because Kathy and Johan were away and I couldn't actually do my or something. So I went to my friend and, although I went to some work, but I went to him there and I've been going to him, and it was such a great support and to be around somebody who was impressed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, and after that it was a great, yeah, it was great to return back to that first thing.
One of the lovely things about Great Freedom is that there is 24/7 support available, so all over the world. So no one has to feel like they're alone. It's a matter of reaching out for that support if it's necessary. It's very important because all kinds of things can come up. So in the Great Freedom Teaching, we refer to the four comforts, the practice of resting naturally, the community, the teaching, and the teacher.
But once when I was a teenager, I had a dream that, and in this dream, I made a really good friend. And then when I woke from the dream, that person didn't exist anymore. And while I was in the dream, I had a great time. I was very disappointed that it was a dream. And I was later kind of, last year, realizing that all of the things I've achieved in my life, they have the same kind of satisfaction as that. Like, in the realm of point of view, it feels satisfying, but it never really reaches that part of me that's what I'd say is essential. And that's what I find is the most powerful realization from Great Freedom, is that the resting, the absolute resting, reaches the entire.
When strong states come up, negative states, whatever they may be, and really thinking that we can find fulfillment even in something positive that we might describe as positive, that's a negative state actually, because fulfillment can't be found in anything temporary. Yet when negative states come up, things that we've described to be negative, that can be the most difficult time to just enjoy the ease of our being, because everything in us is screaming, no, no, this cannot possibly be part of awareness. This cannot possibly be part of a single, immaculate, non-dual expanse. It's just too negative. It feels too awful. I feel too worked up. That's the most important time of all, to just relax. No matter what description exists, it is equal to every other description. And the only way to conclusively arrive at the experience of that is through your own negative states. Rather than being your foes, they are your allies. They're supports for resting naturally. That's what they are. However, if we continue to exclude them like they don't belong in awareness, then we'll need to return to them again and again. we learn that negative labels are important and significant, and that they influence our well-being. The only way we can move beyond that is in our own experience. Because no matter how much we try to remove the negative from life, we'll never be able to do that. Negative appearances will persist. And for most of us, the most negative of all appearances is death. That's the moment of divide and conquer. Especially if we take ourselves to be somebody who's ruled out by death. When we come to definitively realize that all negative states, no matter what they are originally pure, then it enables us to be in all situations, including death, without impediment.
The Buddhists, they do everything to that moment, to death.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Can you repeat it?
The Buddhists do all the practices to that moment for death.
Sometimes we think that realization means getting into a certain state, like emptiness or no thought or a non-conceptual state or neutrality, passivity, nothing exists, nothingness, the void. However, there's no need to have a point of reference anywhere. All of these are just points of reference. There's no need to try to find the perfect description to hold up in. Thank you very much for joining us here today.